This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Some young people grow up in homes where faith is central, and at the same time, they're figuring out who they are as LGBTQIA+ people. So for many, school should be the place where those two parts of life can sit side by side. But in some religious schools, the law still allows discrimination. Well, we're joined by Dr. James Gardner, Research Associate at Western Sydney University, whose research listens directly to the teens navigating all of this. James, welcome.
Thanks, Warren. It's great to be here.
When you speak with young people, what do they share about trying to balance their faith and identity inside school environments?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, it's funny, these navigations, they go beyond the schoolyard, right? It's all about at home and online and at school. But I think, you know, at school especially, it's important to feel like when you walk in the school gates that you can come as your whole self. And yeah, unfortunately, that's just not the case all the time, especially, yeah, under the certain kind of legislative environment we have at the moment.
What impact does that have on their, you know, their devotion to study, I suppose, in terms of their capacity of their brain to focus on studying? What part of it is also focused on worrying about attending a school that legally has the power to discriminate against them?
Absolutely. I think it's completely agreed upon in the research that a safe and accepting environment makes for the best, you know, conditions to learn in. But it also flows through to teachers as well, because you might have, you know, a fantastic teacher, but if they're also, you know, forced to hide who they are, that affects how they teach, and it also affects the relationship with the students. And there might be things that, you know, advice or just a sense of safety in the room that might be possible, but because of these laws is not able to happen.
James, can you walk us through how the federal exemptions actually work?
Yeah, for sure. So the legislation we're talking about is the Sex Discrimination Act, and that is the act that prevents discrimination on the basis of gender, sexuality, marital status, pregnancy, these kinds of things. But when the act came into being in 1984, there was a kind of a carve-out for religious bodies, as well as institutions that provide services to the public, but are doing so with a religious perspective. So it also includes things like aged care homes or schools. So if a school is a religious school, then they're totally basically exempt from that kind of discrimination law.
And I find the aged care quite frightening as well. I mean, the last thing you want to do as you age is go back and, you know, in the closet as such, essentially.
Absolutely.
Full circle.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Now, your research, you mentioned actually then a bit of the mix of pressure and belonging for these kids. What kinds of supportive moments or communities do they discover along the way if they can't necessarily get it in the school?
That's a good question as well. I think, you know, for the last 10 years or so, I would say online has been a really big factor. And, you know, when we say finding kind of connection and belonging online, people immediately think of social media. And that's true. There is a lot of amazing ways to connect with people on social media, especially if you live somewhere like very rurally, or if you have to, you know, your social network and your community is quite conservative or not very accepting. But it's not just social media online. It's also things like events websites or news articles or, you know, different forums as well. So there's that side of things. But there are also a growing set of kind of community groups that are especially focused on LGBTQA+ religious young people. Some of them are more obvious than others. You know, I think it can be a bit of a contentious space. So some of them are a bit word of mouth. Some of them advertise online. Some of them might have a Facebook group, but you need to be invited in. So there's a wide range of things, as well as some churches that are really explicitly kind of LGBT+ friendly, which, you know, they're somewhat rare, but they are growing. It's definitely a growing kind of set of institutions for sure.
When we think of social media, and particularly, you know, the under 16-year-old ban that's coming in, will that have an impact? I mean, we talk about the positive impacts of banning kids from social media, but we don't often talk about the connection, as you've highlighted here. What impact will that have on these kids?
I think it'll have a massive impact for queer young people. You know, it's being queer is one of those things where it's an identity marker that's not, you know, necessarily passed down through your family, right? And so you might be the only one, and it might be really scary to actually tell anyone. And so there are lots of ways on social media that kind of supportive, affirming messages find young people who need it. And there are also really important opportunities for young people to connect with others with a similar story or who they want to learn from, or be, you know, encouraged by, or to know that it's going to be okay. So it's a massive loss for queer young people to not have social media. It's definitely going to be a massive loss.
I'm just thinking, I mean, I didn't go to a religious school at all, but, you know, there were times where I was forced to hide myself. Well, I wasn't even out at the time. And I think of the pressure then. I mean, it must be enormous for kids going to schools that have this ability to discriminate against them. At least, you know, if something happened, I could go home to my parents and complain or what have you. But that must be a lot of pressure.
Absolutely. And part of that is just the unknown. Right. Mm. So the school might be quite supportive in some ways, but then someone might say something a bit controversial or a bit upsetting at assembly. And then from then on in, you might not know who you can trust and who you can't. Mm. And that's really troubling. And it's definitely not all religious schools. Some are really proactive about being supportive about this kind of thing. But there's also not very good transparency in terms of choosing a school. Right. So you might not know in advance what this school's perspective on LGBT plus issues is. And so it's really troubling to have to navigate this kind of by trial and error, which really, like you say, for education, for your friendship circle, you know, all these kinds of things can be really disruptive.
We're chatting with Dr. James Gardner, Research Associate at Western Sydney University, about school discrimination exemptions and how they affect queer young people. James, teachers, I mean, they have a role. There's a comfort, isn't there, for kids knowing that, you know, your teachers are the people that you can trust. They're the custodians of us while we're in their care. Do they feel conflicted in your research? How do they feel about being in a model that could discriminate against the kids that they're meant to protect?
That's a really important question. So our research hasn't interviewed any teachers, but right, we're focusing more on the students. Mm. But, you know, there is a lot of research out there. One of my colleagues at RMIT University, Dr. Alexandra Ceffaglioni, has done a big piece of work on LGBT teachers in Catholic schools. And, you know, it's not just LGBT teachers, it's every teacher. Mm. They want, you know, kind of being the core role of a teacher is to support your students. And, you know, so many teachers want to be able to provide that care and understanding to their students, but these laws generate a kind of culture of silence and fear where teachers are afraid to discuss those issues in case it causes a problem, and students are also afraid to raise them.
Now, a lot of kids didn't leave religion. They reshaped their relationship with it. What does that tell us about, you know, the complexity of the religion that we often overlook?
That was something that I found particularly profound in this research, is that so many young people are connecting with faith and maintaining their connection with faith, but finding ways to do it that feels safe, and finding their kind of allies and their kind of reinterpretations of some aspects of theology. Because, you know, we have lots of different denominations, and we also have, you know, like, theology is not a hard science, I guess is the way to put it. And just in the same way that, you know, different thinkers and priests and pastors and other religious leaders develop theology, so do other religious communities, right? And so It's been really amazing to see how queer young people can find their support network and lean into the parts of their faith that give them comfort and joy and sustain them without having to subscribe to, you know, a particular model of what faith means.
If we look at the big picture nationally, what needs to change so that students and teachers aren't relying on, you know, where they live for basic protection and can feel safe in the schools that they go to and work at?
Yeah. If you'd asked me a few months ago, I would have pointed to the great progress that Victoria as a state has made and that New South Wales is in the process of hopefully coming to in terms of making these changes, because Victoria's laws have changed in 2021 and they are excellent now. They actually do prohibit discrimination on the basis of gender and sexuality in religious schools. The problem is that the federal legislation is in conflict with the state legislation. And at the moment, there's a case before the courts. It'll likely go to the High Court. And we're yet to see what happens when a school discriminates against a staff, in this case, it's a staff member on the basis of their gender identity, whether the state law or the federal law applies. So really what we need is harmony between the state and federal laws. We need the federal government to act, basically.
Is there any appetite for the federal government to act? I mean, they've got a good opportunity to now.
Well, I hope so, because in the 2022 election campaign, Albanese promised to make these changes, right? So we've been waiting 1.5 terms, effectively. Mm. As an interim measure, they put this issue to a review before the Australian Law Review Council. And that review came back, and I think it was through the Attorney General's office, and they've recommended that this law be changed so that the basis for types of discrimination be absolutely narrowed in order to protect LGBT plus students and staff. But that recommendation is just sitting there and it hasn't been acted upon, and, you know, we've been waiting and nothing's happened. So the appetite is there. They've done all the foundational work. It's just time to pull the trigger.
And you know, we were talking earlier about youth crime, and it's so important that kids have a supportive and nurturing environment at school and at home. And in my opinion, we need to get those laws lined up as soon as possible.
Absolutely, yeah. I think when you support young people, the flow-on effects are really profound, not just for education, not just for employment, but in all areas of life. And I think every chance that you've got to, you know, support the conditions for well-being for young people, you need to take it.
James, great to chat with you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. That was Dr. James Gardner, Research Associate at Western Sydney University.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.